treatment. Contact Deanne at garyjsmith.com.au. Station sponsor.
Hi, Malcolm Blight here for our sponsor, Knowles Caravans. And you're listening to Friday Coast Magazine with Brenton and Shiona on 88.7 Adelaide's Coast FM.
Good morning, back again. If I told you that 1 in 25 Australians live with an eating disorder, one death every hour from anorexia nervosa, I think you would be very surprised. And something comes up on your desk every now and then which shows a great interview potential. And I've got that. I'd like to welcome into the studio, which is wonderful to have people coming in after all this COVID stuff, J.L. Keyes, a certified reality therapy counsellor, who's been there, who's lived through this, and who is now doing her best to help this terrible, terrible epidemic. How are you, JL?
I'm really good, thank you, now that I've settled after finding where you are on this large plantation corner here.
It always seems so simple to us. We know where we are, but we forget there's so much happening here at the Glandore Community Centre.
It's been an eye-opener to me. So.
It is. It's a wonderful centre. But we're thrilled to have you here today. These are statistics which are frightening to people. I must admit, I have never had any contact with an eating disorder, and so I'm totally in the dark. You have a free rein to tell us how you got to this stage and how you miraculously survived, and survived on top, obviously.
Okay, so I'd like to start with who I am today, because I think it's a good position to start for listeners to hear, okay, this is where she's arrived and this is where she's at, rather than starting at the doom and gloom end. So today I am the director, as you said, of J.L. Keyes Anorexia Unlock, which is an online facility, I suppose, that I've set up for people to experience gaining their own knowledge and understanding, you know, in the privacy of their own home, if that's their choosing, by looking at the online programs that I've offered. I also offer private counselling, of course, and Zoom opportunities for people who live a distance away and think, oh gosh, I'd really like to connect with someone who's been there, done that, and can understand me. I'm also a published author of 3 books, and I've got one more on the way. I'm an award-winning writer for Brains magazine, and I've been very fortunate to just be given or awarded an award, I don't know how you say that, through Women's Biz Global for women to watch in 2023. And the final description, I guess, I'll give to that is that I see myself as a bridge builder who offers the gift of hope, because back when I was suffering, I didn't have a lot of hope and there wasn't a lot to lean on. So hopefully I'm able to give that to the clients and the people that I reach out to through my story. Alongside of that, I'm a mother of 2 adult children who are both performers in their own right, and they have their own successful businesses in that area. And my daughter has just come back from Sydney and running all around the world in hers, and is now at Allgate Dance and the director and owner there, so congratulations to her. I'm also a nanny. And I don't mean nanny looking after children. I mean the grandma-type nanny
type.
to little Chester Felix, who's 4 months old, and we are enjoying having him join our family. I'd also like to mention Henley High School. I have been a home economics teacher most of my life, and I'm ending up, I can see my career through a relief role at Henley High School, and I'm very, very fortunate to have that ongoing association for the last 8 years. And if you're listening, Henley High, good morning to you this morning.
Nice call out.
I'm also a vocalist, and I enjoy a lot of creative pursuits, and I love, you know, working out. I was a top athlete once, and but I wasn't always the person that's presenting here to you this morning. There is a backstory that has shaped the person who has the confidence to come in here and hopefully speak and give listeners something worthwhile to take away as a message from sharing with you to this morning.
It's been a long trip for you, hasn't it?
It's a very long trip.
It's, and one of the things that I find interesting, how does a home economics teacher suddenly become a therapist? Is that, that's part of the trip?
That's part of the trip as well. I guess just to go back and pinpoint a few little glimpses, I guess, of my life, and then I might come back and embellish on that one a little bit more, just to give people an understanding of who I am and a little bit of what I've endured. I grew up in a world where strong religious ideals were the norm, and several changes of dress found me lost and alone at every new school, and my early years were marred by sexual abuse. By my early teens, I had developed into a top athlete, a vocalist who sang to thousands, and a high-achieving academic. However, by the age of 15, life caught up with me, and I withdrew into the darkness of anorexia nervosa, and I did that for the next 9 years. My 20s did find me married, and I had gone through teachers' college because I showed an aptitude for creative outcomes and for cooking, so it was genuinely, how about being a home economics teacher? Okay, I'll go and do that. So I was doing that, and then I left, and by the age of 30, I was a mother of two. In my 30s, I had been diagnosed at the age of 24 with anorexia nervosa, and I had left that behind. But because I didn't do the exploration work as to why I developed an eating disorder in the first place, back in my day, it was put on weight, all will be forgiven, and you'll be fine. You'll be back on the track running, you'll be singing to thousands again, and all will be, you know, in the past. Well, that didn't happen, and I understand that now because I didn't look at my story elements and see what had, you know, had contributed to me having an eating disorder in the first place. So replacing that with several mental issues or mental illness disorders, and they included chronic fatigue, debilitating migraines, OCD, depersonalization, and finally suicidal depression. At the age of 37, my marriage dissolved, and I met a wonderful lady by chance, because I wanted to know how to support my children properly and emotionally, coming through now a divorce situation between their parents. And I was introduced to a lady called Joan Hookstad, who practiced reality therapy underpinned by choice theory. And she asked me, she spoke four little words, and they were the most powerful words for me at the age of 37, and they certainly produced a lot of tears. And those four words strung together were, tell me your story. And no one had ever said to me before, in other opportunities or roads that I went down through, you know, how do I heal my body? How do I get back on top? How do I do this? No one said, tell me your story. And so that was the turning point difference, and when recovery became reality for me. So today, the once frail version of myself who used the walls and the fences to be able to get from one space to the other, who spent long hours sitting on the porch while our children are at school because I couldn't do anything else, is now a very strong person with a wealth of understanding and knowledge, and from my own lived experience with mental illnesses, including, as we now know, the eating disorder and suicidal depression. And out of that small glimpse of my background, I now have developed the passion to give the gift of hope to others who struggle. So that's a little glimpse, and we might come back to your question, which was, would you like to remind me?
Home economics teacher, why did you not go back or to home economics teaching instead of the hard task of becoming a therapist? Because it must be difficult.
Well, I actually did them side by side. So once I met Joan Hookstad, I was a single mum by then at home. And while my children at school, I was able to go and see Joan and begin the hard work at looking at my story and what I call my story elements. And we pull out and identify those and explore those story elements that create the most upset, you know, when we recall them. And we begin to break them down for truth and look at the fear factor associated and all of those things. So I had the time then to do and explore that part of me while I was still able to stay at home. I lived at Coromandel Valley and I had 2 acres up there. And so I had a nice environment around me actually to be able to sit in the silence and digest what Joan was sharing with me about my life and why and when and how it had all fallen apart. And then later on, when the children were both at school, I decided, look, it was time to not be so isolated. And I went back in a relief role. Okay. And so I went back and I did a lot of relief in different schools. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I was awarded contracts. So I've taught at Marrickville High, Adelaide High, the Heights, down at Fleurieu Peninsula. I've been, you know, at a lot of schools across Adelaide, which has also added to my understanding of how children work and how they develop and what impacts their growth and development as well. So I guess then, because I had to earn money, I went back to teaching. So I was doing that alongside of still dealing with all that had manifested in my life in terms of mental illness. So side by side, and if anyone's listening from those schools, they wouldn't know, and they go, oh, we didn't know she was doing that at the same time. But what I was also doing was building up a bank of knowledge of why people go down or fall down into the depths of mental illness and what contributes to that. And so I was sort of doing them side by side, and I guess I still am, because I'm still in a relief role at Henley High, as I've suggested this morning. But alongside of that, I'm building up this other business aspect so I can give my information to those that want to hear it. And eventually, I guess, the teaching will go. Sorry, Henley.
Did you find when you were active in schools or doing a lot of work in schools, because anorexia nervosa is often attached, isn't it, to teenage girls, did you find that you looked at it in different ways because you may have had children in your class that you could recognise that factor in, although they may not have been so willing to admit that that was what was wrong with them?
I guess my experience looking back wasn't so much identifying students with eating disorders, although, you know, you sort of pick up the, once you know the clues,
right,
you know, you are very, very aware. But I think initially how I applied it in my teaching role, having then, because I did go and study then reality therapy and did that course and became the counsellor, became certified in that. But that gave me a stronger ability to be able to connect with a range of students that presented in the classroom. With my background, I was a very judgmental person. And, you know, what was good and what was wrong and what was right and, you know, how we have to be and blah. And this is how we fix it up through, you know, strict rules and all of that sort of thing. And I learned a different way of connecting. So I think the benefit that it gave me with a lot of students is knowing how to look at a student and see, hang on, I'm picking up something different here. I'm seeing fear. I'll give an example, I guess, at one of the schools I was in. I remember standing out the front teaching pancakes to little Year 8s one day, and I looked over as I canvassed around the room to see how they were all going, and one little boy was kept looking over his shoulder and looking back, and you could see he was really struggling with trying to make them and make them perfectly and all of that. So I decided to go over and connect with him, and as I approached him, you could see him turn his back to me and hope that I just kept walking and didn't connect.
For him, yeah.
And I went up and I said, I know this isn't eating disorders, but it's very related. And I went up and I just said, sweet, what's happening for you this morning? And he sort of looked at me and I said, it's okay. And he said, oh, I just can't do this. I said, would you like to look at it in a different way? I said, where do you think you're not able to do it? And so we began to talk about, you know, what he wasn't able to do. And I said, would you like to look at it that this morning you are being given an opportunity how to put a recipe together and turn it into pancakes? Don't see it as I can't do it and I'm making mistakes. See it as learning opportunities moving forward. So what is this batter at this moment?
Yeah.
What is this teaching you about you? And so we began to go down that road, and then together I said, perhaps we'll do this together. Let me see what you're doing, and perhaps we'll fine-tune. And so he began. You could see where he was stumbling, so together we worked on it. And then the next one was, and then the last one, I said, I'm leaving it to you now. I reckon you've got it. And he did the last one beautifully.
Yeah.
So, but I walked away and I thought, there's fear in that child's life. Fear of making mistakes, getting it wrong. Someone's got a big hammer over your head.
Yeah, what a shame.
And that was what I related to, because that was part of why I went into an eating disorder. So I could totally relate to that little lad. Identifying young women with eating disorders is a harder one to get into, particularly in a relief role, because I'm not the main teacher.
Well, it's not what you're actually there for.
It's not what I'm there for.
Yeah.
I can highlight the teachers around me and say, look, I'm wondering if I'll leave it with you. And then you just hope one day that it might come
that
back your way.
Now, you put a lot of, and I don't mean stress on, but you link anorexia nervosa and eating disorders to mental illnesses, which a lot of people have never done before. It's an eating disorder. It's not a mental disorder. It's a, you know, it's a physical thing. And you're putting them together, which is great. And it obviously is links between them.
Well, I see eating disorders as a mental illness. I don't distinct, you know, they're not a distinct thing. Because if you look at, well, how do we work with a person that has an eating disorder? We look at their thoughts, which impact their behaviours, which impact their emotions, which impact their physical body and how the physical body is reacting to that, which is no different to if someone presented with the types of mental illnesses that we would put into that category.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the same process of, as, if you like. So I see it very much as a mental illness because it was for me.
It was.
Mm. It's never about food and weight. Food and weight is a symptom of something else going on in your life. And so that was the way I was displaying it, if you like. That was how it was manifesting in my life. But I put the weight on, but it didn't fix me up.
It didn't.
I developed other associated illnesses. So therein lies the connection, because I hadn't done the exploratory work of the life events in my life that contributed to that outcome.
And now you can,
And now I can.
This is a subject that we could sit and talk for hours about.
We could.
And our 15 minutes just doesn't cover. But I feel that now that we've covered your beginnings and where you are and what you want to achieve, that we really need to have more interviews on how this affects the listeners. There must be listeners out there who know people who have got the disorder but may not know what to do about it, which is the sad part, what you do altogether. Some of your wonderful achievements, and woman to watch in 2023. Well, I think we should be right there watching you very, very closely and bringing you to our listeners. I'd love to. We haven't even skimmed the surface.
No, we haven't. And I know we wouldn't.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things that 15 minutes is sort of the applied thing that people lose their listening ability after 15 minutes. And every part of your message is just so important that we're definitely going to have to set up some interviews and work through at your pace. But, I mean, thank you for coming in today. You're
absolute
remarkable.
Pleasure.
I mean, as I said, it's never touched me in any way. Anorexia, I've been lucky that, you know, I've had daughters and things like that, but that has never touched. And so I'm totally a blind canvas. But those statistics are frightening.
They are.
For anyone. And I think it's sad that it covers all ages, all sexes, all genres, probably all ethnic cultures. It
absolutely
doesn't pick on anyone.
Doesn't pick on anyone in particular.
And I think it's really important that we go into it, delve into it more. Thank you for coming in today. It's been lovely meeting you, and I'm going to set up some interviews so that we can do this on a bigger range, because I think it's very important.
I do too, and thank you for supporting that, the vital importance of it, and thank you, Shion and Brenton. He's sitting here in the background.
He's sitting here
quietly.
Now that you know where to come.
Thank you very much.
it's that stress out of it, but we will be bringing it to our listeners on a bigger basis, because it is a really, really important issue in today's world.
It absolutely is. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. We'll let Brenton get on with his